This audio comes to you from the Science of Mind Archives.
We take you now to Alice Tully Hall at Lincoln Center in New York to hear the Sunday morning Religious Science service.
And to our station in Baltimore, we will say good evening because they will be getting this at 10 o'clock tonight. Now it is a good morning, not only because nature is good outside, but because we are great on the inside. What we are talking about every Sunday morning here and on our broadcast is what I call depth thinking. Or I sometimes call it selected thinking. It is not the usual. It is a deliberate attempt to change subconscious mind patterns through a spiritual technique. And it is, for many of us, a very successful method. Because we know that down underneath, in the midst of each one of us, is the real creative process. Here is the action of life, the action of intelligence, what we have called the action of God. The deep down underneath real believing in good or evil, right or wrong, whatever it may be. That the surface is interesting, but the depth underneath is what tells the real story of the individual. Now, this is not new. This has been around since the beginning of time. However, in the last 100 years, we have had a very great confirmation of it, both through the wonderful ministry, if I want to call it that, of the academic field of psychology, psychiatry, and psychoanalysis, and through our own field of creative metaphysics. This understanding that underneath, in my mind, your mind, is the answer to our experience. While it's not new, yet we need to reaffirm it. All right, I'm going to invite you to be still with me for our morning treatment, as we call it, and let this go into the depths of your mind, that behind the surface, back of the facade of life, are the deep issues. Those issues of life and love, health and good, the issues that come out from the great creative process within us. These are the issues of the spirit. These are the truths of life. So in each one of us, they are now activated. They are now given strength, vitality, for a resurgence of all that is good in life. And so we are accepting this, believing this, knowing this, and therefore we are making it so because it is so. All right, and so it is. Those of us here at Alice Tully Hall in Lincoln Center this morning, we turn to the third inside page of our program for the song we sing each Sunday. The words are exactly what we believe. And every time I think I would like to change to another set of words, my mind said, you can't do any better than that with which you have right now. You are saying everything that needs to be said. Or in essence, we are singing everything that needs to be said. So let me read the first verse of the song. We build a new tomorrow. We draw the pattern clear. We make our plans with wisdom, for mind is ever here. Our thinking makes our future. Our actions pave the way. We build a new tomorrow on patterns formed today. All right, a great old tune, and you know it by heart. Let's sing it with authority. I suggested that we sing it with authority, and we certainly did. So all the way from the Maine, the border of Maine, down through into the South, and then later in the West and San Francisco stations, they'll all be hearing us sing. And they can all sit back and say, at last they did it really good. All right. I took as a topic today one that is not appealing. So I'm delighted to see such a large group of people here today. I thought maybe you'd see the topic in the newspapers yesterday and say, not for me. I've taken as my topic, happiness is hard work. Now, 100 years ago when all this started, our whole idea was to make everybody happy, healthy, joyous, prosperous, and free. And we announced it and proclaimed it and shouted it and sang it and did the whole bit. We attracted untold thousands, if not millions, of people across the nation. And they were all so glad and so happy and so rejoicing and so etc. during the time of the lecture. 2 days later, they weren't so happy, they weren't so joyous, and they weren't so free. So they'd say to our teachers, well, but if you were involved in the situation I'm involved in, you wouldn't be happy either. Now, when people tell me this, I always say, well, but I'm not involved in that situation. Now, that doesn't mean such a situation doesn't exist. And perhaps we've held out too great a banner that everyone can be happy without doing anything about it. Just read our books, read our magazines, listen to Dr. Barker, and you'll be all right. Well, we've had thousands have been doing this for years, and they're not all right, unfortunately. Now, there have been hundreds out of these thousands that have changed. that have rebuilt their lives, who have moved from the negative to the positive, who have proven beyond the shadow of a doubt that what we are saying is correct. But these are the people that worked at it. These are the people that said, all right, I'm going to do something about it. Now we know today that the subconscious mind rules your experience. 100 years ago, we didn't know it, except in essence. We'd had the wisdom teachers. We'd had great minds say that it is done unto you according to your belief, a statement of Jesus. We'd had the Old Testament teaching of, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And we had had many out of the field of philosophy, out of other great religious systems and teachings and writings. But it had remained as a belief, a conviction, and that was all. Now, when we came around about 100 years ago, we said to people, you can actually believe this if you want. You can take it from the intellectual level to the subconscious level and really believe it. And those that did transformed their lives. Because as you remember, Paul wrote that we are to be transformed by the renewing of our mind. And what he didn't know, yes he did, but I don't know what he knew. I wasn't there. At any rate, we can say, yes, but you can use that system to work either way. You can use that system of belief, of the transforming of your mind with ideas, to use either way you want it. Now, we here have decided to use it for the expansion of the individual good in our lives, because that's what we want. Now, why isn't happiness easy? Why does it take work? Because it doesn't just happen. It has to be created. It doesn't just happen. It has to be created. Now the nostalgic older person says, well, but all babies are happy. Of course they're not. Of course they're not. Sure, they giggle and they smile and they say mama and da-da. At least I did, I'm sure, way back there. But boy, did I cry. So did you. We all wept. Perhaps even more than we're able to weep as adults. Because here again, we had to learn something. We had to learn, and of course the child mind didn't know it, to be acceptable to his parents. Because the greatest fear of the child's mind is rejection. And the child needed assurance. And he discovered, or she discovered, ways of assuring the parents that he or she was a fairly happy person. Often a facade, but often real. Now you and I are children grown tall. We are mature, we earn our money, we pay our bills, we move in a social group, we function in a national pattern and an international picture. So we are adults. We have grown tall. But the question to many, many of our friends in psychology, psychiatry, and psychoanalysis is, first, are we mature? And second, have we really grown up on the inside? Or do we want our happiness given us on a silver platter? I counsel people, as you know, a great deal, and a person will come in and say, I have found the exact right person to marry. Now I will be happy the rest of my life. And I always say, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. I agree, you may have found the exact right person. Now this, I have no argument about that. But if you're going to be happy the rest of your life, you and your husband have got to work at this. A happy marriage is hard work. Any type of close personal relationships are hard work. whether it be the parent-children relationship, the husband-wife, the brother-sister, the good friend or friends, whatever it is, it takes work on the part of the individual to maintain that relationship with an overall pattern of good, of joy, you want to call it that, or of happiness. Happiness has to be earned. Now, many people go around and say, well, I'm not happy. And you and I know they're not. But we say to these people, what are the deep undercurrents of your mind? And then we listen. And what we listen to, we don't like. So we listen to one negative after the other. And when they get through, we may say, well, now I can understand why you're not happy. If this is what you really believe down underneath, then how can you be happy? You believe that life is against you. You believe that people are against you. You believe that situations are against you. All this you believe, and you have a right to believe it. But at the same time, you do not have a right to happiness. Happiness comes from a basically patterned, creative mind. Or shall I put it this way? From a subjective or subconscious patterned, creative, affirmative mind. An employee at my apartment house, after my television a few weeks ago with Reverend Ike, said, I'd like one of your books. So I did the loving thing. I gave him one. I paid for it. That helped. So a few days later, he said to me, he said, are you really the optimist that you say you are in the first three chapters of this book? And I said, I really am. And then I walked away quickly. Now, whether he ever got past the third chapter, I'll never know. I hope he did. Now, this was a young man in his early 20s, with all of life ahead of him, and yet he couldn't quite understand why I, in my tender years of gray hair, should still be optimistic. But I am. And I trust that until my last breath I will be. I expect to be. And I want you to be. Now, your depth thinking down underneath. See, on the surface we can always make the platitudes. You invite guests to your house, and they are always on the surface. Very nice people. They talk very nicely. And you have an excellent time, provided they keep out of politics and religion, which are two still of the great taboos of social activity. For other reasons, yes, but not for social activity. We need them for other reasons. Now, coming back. This happiness quotient may be something you are born with, but it has to be something you developed. You and I have known people who were miserable all their lives. Now, we can explain this, they can explain it. And we can have understanding, if not sympathy. But if you were to say to one of these people, why don't you change your basic down underneath pattern, they'd say they couldn't. Now perhaps this is true. I do think that defeat, rejection, unhappiness, bitterness can become a real neurotic state. However, that doesn't mean it isn't curable. But it's only curable when the person wants to be cured. Most unhappy people do not want to be made glad. And if you don't think so, you try it. You try it, I've tried it, and we've all tried it. Now let's take us that are open to suggestion. Is the essence of life a joyous essence? Yes. In all the scriptures of the world, we have no record of God weeping. We have no record of the bitterness of God. We have no record of the rejection of God of itself. We only have a record of its divine givingness. That's the only record we can find. Now, you can trace this through the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Bhagavad Gita, whatever. You will find that the essence at the center has in it the potential of joy, of success, of victory, and that is what you and I have at the center. Now, we can leave it there. Or we can activate it. And how do we activate it? As you do anything else, you have to think in its terms. You have to think in its terms. So, let's say that in the next 2 weeks you're going to buy an automobile. And so what do you and your family do? From now until the decision is made, you think cars, think cars, think cars, think cars, think cars. You go to this showroom, you go out on this trial run, you go to another showroom, you go out on another trial run. When you get home after it, you discuss everything about it, including the color of the upholstery. The way the engine works, the results, the probable mileage per gallon, and for at least 3 weeks, you are completely automobile aware. Here's your whole field of interest, and it should be if you're going to buy a car. Here's your whole field of interest. And as a result, eventually you buy a car. And you're very happy. And you're very happy for a number of weeks or a number of months. And then your attention necessarily shifts to something else. You can't think about an automobile forever. But for the 3 weeks prior to purchase, boy, you can. You shifted your whole attention in that area. Sure, you went through your daily routines. You did your jobs, whatever they may have been. But your attention was, I'm going to go to another showroom, I'm going to take another test run, I'm going to see what the prices are, etc., forever. Now, you deliberately shifted your attention. Now, you can do this about anything. But you see, an abstraction doesn't hold that fascination. So if I were to say to someone, why don't you think instead of what you've been thinking? Why don't you think about life, love, and wisdom? They look at me. They just look at me. Now, they can think easily about disease. They can think easily about a possible lover. They can think easily about how much they don't know. Oh, boy. That they can do with the greatest of ease. They're acclimated to it. They're in the mood of it. They can pursue it in all directions. And so they go off. Now we say to them, all right, why can't you shift your attention and earn happiness? You can be happy if you'll produce it out of your own self. And they'll say, oh, but I want the world to make me happy. The world won't make you happy. It never has. Well, a great deal of money would make me happy. Don't kid yourself. Some of the saddest people we have in the world live on Park Avenue and Fifth Avenue. Not all of them. Good God, I know a lot of people that are happy. But they've made themselves happy. They admit it. So, well, it'd be all very good if this, that, or the other. Nope, there is no material world explanation for happiness. There never has been and there never will be. There is only an interior explanation of why or why not the individual is or isn't happy. And again, it has to be earned. Look, no relationship of any closeness doesn't go through problems of any kind. It could be a family relationship, the marriage, the whatever. But when the people involved want the relationship continued on a creative and happy basis, they temper their thinking. They temper their thinking. They adjust their thinking. And they come out on top. Now, this would be true in your office as well as your home. In your work as well as your play. But it's an inside thing. Now, you're going to say, well, I don't know. I don't know. All right, that means you won't do it, so don't. None of my business whether you're happy or not. As long as you dress well on Sunday mornings and look happy. What you do the rest of the week, I don't care. Except I wish you'd be happy. Nothing in life is ever achieved without hard work. Nothing. You're going to say, oh, that sounds pessimism. It isn't at all. Not the least bit pessimistic. I'm on the side of greatness. I'm on the side of the right, the good, the healthy, the happy, the rejoicing, the prosperous, and all the rest. But I know through the experience of my own life that I had to earn it. And through the experience of many other people who had to earn it. There is no easy way. When you tell a child that when they grow up everything's going to be all right, that's a lie. You know. Just you wait, dear, when you get to be a big boy or a big girl, everything's going to be all right. It will not. I think adolescence is hell. At least mine was. When I break down most people, they admit theirs was. And luckily, I couldn't stay 16 to 17 years of age too long. The calendar, bless its heart, moved on. And I moved on. And so, no, it's too easy to say, well, everybody that's young is happy. Not a word of truth in it. Everybody that, what, elderly with plenty of income is happy. Not a word of truth in it. Now, there are happy people in both of those areas. But they've earned it. They have projected it out of themselves. First of all, they've learned to stop fighting. They have learned to stop fighting. Let the people who want to fight, fight. And their numbers are legion. They're always there. I can even respect them. I can even agree with their fine principles. But I have to realize, I cannot fight the world and have the good of the world. I cannot fight any system and expect to prosper. Now that doesn't mean I necessarily go along with the system. I must see both its advantages and its disadvantages. But I look at it from a non-fight, selective viewpoint rather than fight. I am sure that the people around Jesus said, oh, for heaven's sakes, we've got to fight the emperor, we've got to fight the Roman government. They couldn't get this man, according to what little records we have, the least bit interested. Not at all. He merely said, do what you need to do and keep quiet. Now, you won't find that in the New Testament, but you'll find the essence of it. So if someone calls up on Monday and says, what was that Dr. Barker said Jesus said? I'm just telling you right now, I can't prove that Jesus said it. So save your 10 cents. Put it in the plate this morning along with that bill. Now, fight? No. Argue? No. Look, some of my closest friends have their set opinions. And when they start, I just relax. First of all, they are not telling me anything I haven't heard before. You see. And I say, all right, now let's not get excited. These people honestly believe this, and they have a right to believe it. On the other hand, I have to believe something different, and I have a right to believe it. And I don't wreck a pleasant afternoon or evening by insisting that I'm right and they're wrong. And I see to it, by being not too interested, that they don't wreck my afternoon by being all right and I'm all wrong. They suddenly catch on to my quietness. They say, any time Barker's quiet, watch out. I kind of slow down. I kind of look out the window. And I kind of agree, oh, sure. Core. And after a while, they catch on, change the topic around to another topic that is interesting to all of us, or the two of us, or the four of us, or whatever it is. Yes, I wish there were virtues in argument. I wish there were. I've indulged in it myself. As I grow in wisdom, I don't argue as much. So what? Now, does this mean I never will again? I make no finalities. I may very easily do it again. But at the moment, I haven't that fight, that argument to change everyone else. Or at least the few people with whom I am closely associated. So it's the old axiom of to live and let live. Now, does this mean you wouldn't participate in social activities? Of course you do. Does it mean you do not listen to people? Of course you do. Does it mean you have to agree with everyone? Of course not. Not at all. But you temper it with wisdom. Because you want to be happy. You want to leave that group, whatever it may be, happy. You don't want to go out of there angry, annoyed, with all kinds of opinions about each one present. You don't want that, and I don't want it. No, you want understanding, communication, and you want to know what's going on in these people's minds. I do. And if they're concerned about something, I think it's wise for me to know it. Good for me to know it. Whether I champion it or not, is another matter. At least I know it. In turn, I think they should know what I really believe. And whether, again, they champion it or not is unimportant. At least we have had communication. Happiness depends on communication. See, happiness is a people thing. You're going to say, well, but the monk alone in his cell for 30 years, he's happy. I don't know. First of all, they won't let me in to ask him. And secondly, I'm not going to join him. He may be, I don't know. I have no right to say he isn't. I only know that I'm happier because of people. I am happier because of relationships. I am happier because something of the love of God in me can respond to something of the love of God in another person. And that perhaps is the key to the whole thing. What is the response? If the love of God in you can respond and will respond to the love of God in another living soul, you have your answer. Now, do I mean particularly in a marriage relationship or a sex relationship? No, that's not what I'm talking about. Those are necessary relationships and have their own right place. I'm talking about the general communication of life with all people everywhere. Now, people are very interesting. You're going to say, well, everyone I know is enough. Well, all I can say is like attracts like. So, all of you stay away from squirrels. Or you may say, everyone I know is unhappy. May well be so. Can't you find one happy person? You can say, oh, but it's all on the surface. How do you know? Who are you to sit in judgment? Who am I to sit in judgment? How do I know? All I know is that there is a certain freedom that comes with happiness. There is a certain way of responding to life that comes with happiness. And you and I have the ability. Now you're going to say, well, Dr. Barker, does this mean I've got to be happy about everything? Of course not. But for God's sake, be happy about one or two things. Then they start in, well, what? How can I be happy if? And then they go on and on and on and on. When they get to the end, I said, I guess you can't. And they say, well, that's not what I came here for. I know, but you don't want what you came here for. That at the center of every person is the creative process. And it can be used in creative ways for the production of right results. Depth thinking. Depth planning. Depth patterns. Down underneath. Now you can say, well, I'm too busy to think about all these things. Fine, I have to say. Most people I know are too busy to think about all these things. I won't say that because you people whom I know so well aren't that way. But once in a while a mood comes over me as it does over you. And I think, well, it's been pretty good the last few years, but will it last? And then I sit there and talk to myself, and I said, don't be an idiot. It'll last if you make it last. It'll disintegrate if you go into fears and doubts and questions. It's up to you, I say to myself. You're the only one that can make you happy. Not the world. You're the only one that can continue the present good in your life and expand it. You're the only one because you're the only experience in your individual world. Now, you flow with people, but you, in the final analysis, are totally alone. No matter how much you love, no matter how much you share, no matter how much love you receive, each person is an island, But it can be a happy island. You know, every once in a while, somebody seldom sends me a poem. I wish it had never been written. You're born alone, you live alone, you die alone. I think, oh, Lord. You know, absolute negativism. Now, it's true that as an individualized unit, we are very alone. But we spread our wings. We send out our channels of communication. We do everything. I remember years ago, a not well-known, but a former actress was in terminal case of cancer, and she knew it. And she asked several of us who were at her bedside. She said, you know, I don't think I'm going to be here tomorrow morning. And she said, I have one last bottle of champagne. She said, go on, open it. And her face lit up. So, get out those good glasses. Oh. So, come on now, let's have a drink to the joy of life and the continuity of being. And we drank it with tears going down our face, you know. She didn't have tears. She drank it with a smile. And she wasn't there next morning. She'd gone on her way. But by golly, she communicated something right to the last breath. And I hope I'll do the same. Reminds me, I better put a bottle of champagne on ice. So it'll be ready 30 years from now. All right, I've said it. You've got to earn it. You are it. What you do with it, fine. All right, so when is the morning lesson? Thank you. I just want to be sure you're applauding my lecture and not the champagne. Now, here at our religious science activity in Alice Tully Hall in Lincoln Center, New York, we're going to do what we always do. We're going to let you give us happy money. We're going to take up the morning collection, which we need for the operation of the business of this organization. We ask that you give in love and in joy, and in turn, we shall use it with wisdom. into our new month, and it's going to be a great one. Please note that there is a change in the daily lectures because the Reverend Eric Pace is in Los Angeles for a month speaking at one of our churches there. And so on Monday at 12:10 p.m., you're going to have Mrs. Eileen Sundstrom as your speaker. She's been speaking during the last month, and the people like her. Who is no longer a new speaker, Mr. Edward Henry on Thursday. Everybody loves him. Come in on a Thursday and hear him. Other than that, the same. Mr. Grayson, on Tuesday, he's coming back. And Raymond Charles Barker on Wednesday, and Mr. Herman's on Friday. Now, Mr. Grayson, right now, at this moment, is on an aeroplane. God love him. Why? He's very nice. I'm sure God does love him. I don't need that old cliche, do I? At any rate, he'll be in around midnight tonight after a month in Europe and South America. And as you know, when I come back from trips, I really give it to you, but good. I'm always excited. So he'll be back tomorrow with his excitement to start his new class. And you have the folder on it in your program. If not, they're outside. You can get it. He's going to talk on a small booklet of Mr. Holmes, The Practical Application of the Science of Mind, during the month of August only, four Monday evenings and four Thursday afternoons. The evenings for business people and the afternoons for those who cannot come in the evening. The same lesson both times. So read it over and sign up for it this morning if you can. If not, come early. Everybody arrives at 7:01, and we have a long lineup, and come early. Make your check out ahead of time. Get everything out of those pocketbooks that needs to be gotten out of. We men, in turn, will get everything out of our wallets that needs to be gotten out of the wallet. All right. Going to be a superb class. We have a tremendous registration for it. As you know, the Reverend Mr. Grayson is our associate and very, very much beloved. He's also speaking Wednesday night at 6, which again reminds me that this evening, there is one more lecture, 6 o'clock tonight at the church building by Mr. Fritz Hermans, and you're invited. Now, I'd like to say to the radio audience as well as to those here that all of our activities, other than Sunday morning, take place at our own edifice at 14 East 48th Street, right off Fifth Avenue, in the heart of Manhattan here in New York, and the zip code is 10017. I say that because many, many of you write in. You'll be interested in two new items. Starting July 1st. Starting July 1st, we secured new equipment and more professional equipment for the making of our cassette tapes. Mr. Shippers told me outside this morning that as a result, there hadn't been a single tape made in July that had been returned as being defective. Prior to that, we've been getting a few every month. But now with the new equipment, you get grade A cassettes. And all the Sunday morning talks are available, as well as the unexpected money treatment, the 13 treatments and all. Now the booklet which Mr. Grayson will be teaching, The Practical Application of the Science of Mind, is available outside here this morning at Tully Hall. And for those in the radio audience, if you want it and don't have it, the price of it is $1.50, and we'll be glad to mail it to you. All right, on the back of your program is the announcement of my booklet, You Can. The new printing is here, and that means there's 30,000 copies now in print. This booklet is 50 cents, and the radio audience can get it. Just send in $1 and say you want 2 copies of the booklet, You Can. All right. As you know, everything is available and good. You know, most churches find July and August a very quiet time. Instead of that, we find it a very vital time. A very vital time. First of all, naturally, our people go on vacations, and they should. But they aren't that long a vacation. And secondly, people come into New York from all over the country. And those that know Dr. Barker, look him up. And they all come in. When I greet outside here later, I'll be greeting people from all over the country, as well as good friends who are always here. So we are not having a summer lull. We're busier than ever. Getting ready to be even more busy this fall. And we're all a part of it, and it's great, and it's good. All right, let's come back to the idea of the morning. You can earn happiness. You have a right to happiness. God never created an unhappy person. They've done it themselves. God never created the miserable. They've done it themselves. But not you. Ella Wheeler Wilcox, a poetess years and years ago, and those of us who are mature will remember, she wrote, "Laugh and the world laughs with you, weep and you weep alone." Very true. And as corny as it may sound today, there's some truth in it. Now, does this mean you need to laugh all the time? Of course not, but for heaven's sake, be happier. Great. When you're walking through a crowd, look at their faces and say, "I don't want to look like that." Now, does this mean you put on a false optimism and cheer? Not at all. But you say, "Within me is the wellspring of the living joy of the Spirit. It is mine, and I cultivate it. I like it. I rejoice in it." All right, shall we stand for our closing idea together? Reminding ourselves yet once again that we are dealing with one creative cause, one God, one Spirit, one life, one intelligence, one law of its action, one way in which it works. And it has placed at the center of our souls all life, all love, all goodness, all joy, all happiness. And from this inner depth, we bring it to the surface. We think in its terms. We laugh with the laughter of the ages. The laughter of the sphere. We rejoice. We are glad. And we are free. All right? So it is.
Sunday morning lecture of religious science has been broadcast from Alice Tully Hall at Lincoln Center in New York. Please address all letters and contributions to Dr. Raymond Charles Barker at 14 East 48th Street, New York 10017. A list of books and pamphlets is available on request. You're cordially invited to attend these lectures in person or listen again next Sunday morning at 11:05 for another broadcast of the Sunday morning lecture of religious science.
For more spiritual content like this, visit scienceofmindarchives.com.